Okay, I'm calling the transportation finance.
I'd rather be in that committee.
Yeah, exactly. Very nice targets. I'd like to call our transportation finance committee meeting to order, and we do have a quorum. So if anyone has had a chance to look at our minutes from April 10th and would like to approve those, that would be very helpful at this time. Okay, we have Chair. Representative Benson.
That we approve you.
Thank you. With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, those opposed? Motion carried. Okay, so now we will move to our omnibus bill, and we have the author's delete all amendment. I believe it's DE6. And would you like, what's that? And today, just to be clear, we're doing an informational hearing on the amendment. So if you would like to lead us through that, that would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just to be clear, this is for informational purposes only. We're going to have some testimony, it looks like, in response to this. And as Representative Holbrook said a few days ago, this is an important piece of the process. So we're going to listen to that testimony, and we have an opportunity to amend the bill after we hear from the public and each other. And there's a deadline for that, I believe, 6 p.m. today. We can have a little flexibility on that, but not past. So 5 p.m.? Okay, well, it may be ended. It may be 6. But, you know, we're saying, you know, late this afternoon for amendments, and we'll be voting on the bill then on Monday. So members, I'm going to just ask Mr. Burris to walk through the bill, actually run through the bill, because he's got a busy schedule, but I would encourage you to ask him questions, and we'll do the walkthrough and then hear some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, members, Article 1 contains the appropriations for the Departments of Public Safety and MnDOT and Metropolitan Council. There are a number of change items that Mr. Lee could start by stepping through to highlight some of the changes in the base appropriations.
Madam Chair and members, if you look at your spreadsheet, the Transportation FY14-15 budget looks like this. All of the change items are highlighted in italics, and if you look, there are three items. There's the base budget, the governor's budget, and House File 1444, the DE6 amendment. So we're working off the DE6 amendment. So the change items are highlighted in italics. The first one is on line 9, grants and navigational aids decrease. This is to bring in line the airport development assistance spending with revenue, and that is a decrease in $1.3 million over the biennium, and that's the same as the governor's recommendation. I will note one omission on this spreadsheet. There's actually a governor's recommendation to add about $200,000 more in trunk highway dollars for aviation support and services. Unfortunately, that is not in the spreadsheet, but it is not in the DE6 amendment, but it is a governor's recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chair, can we ask questions as we go along here?
How would you like to proceed?
Well, that's your call, Madam Chair. Maybe that's the best way to go, because we have a lot of bill to go through.
It'll be difficult to go back then. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is that line 9, is that trunk highway money, or what is that?
No, that's airports money.
Uh-huh. That'd be nice to know when we're adding or subtracting from trunk highway money, I think, when you indicate that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
What?
Oh, yeah, I should, Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Mr. Lee.
Representative Earhart, I should point out the fund column on
thank
the
you.
Left-hand side. So the next change items are in the transit for MnDOT. That's mostly Greater Minnesota Transit. The change items are a general fund increase on line 20 5.8 million a year, or 11 million over the biennium, and a transfer from the special revenue vehicle services operating account totaling 5 million over the biennium. Currently, the vehicle service operating account has a balance of about 10 million.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That, Mr. Lee, that's one I noticed last night. That comes from driver vehicle services, and we're transferring it, I believe, to MnDOT for Greater Minnesota Transit. Is that something we've done before, or is there a special need for that, or can you explain that move?
Representative
Hornstein. Madam Chair, Representative Beard, no. And but, you know, we found, as we were kind of going through the budget very specifically, you know, with the agencies, and I think actually others have pointed this out, that there is excess balance in this fund. And we talked to the agency about, he's smiling, we talked to the agency, so what are you using this for? And can we apply it to some uses, you know, within your jurisdiction? And we didn't really get clarity. And so, you know, we have some tremendous needs for Greater Minnesota Transit, and you know, that's where we decided to spend it. So, you know, it's in our committee jurisdiction. And I don't know about you, Madam Chair and Representative Beard, but, you know, I asked them questions about this money, and it's sitting there. And so it's a one-time appropriation. They didn't have a plan to spend it. So here we are. I mean, this isn't a norm. This isn't something that we would do normally. But I thought it was a pretty extenuating circumstance.
Representative Beard.
Oh, Madam Chair, yes. I'm having a flashback to remembering those various pots of money. I think there's four or five of them over there that accrue money from one thing or another, not the least of which is the fees we added on for the MnLARS project. But
well, Madam Chair and Representative Beard, I hate to interrupt. I asked them about that, too.
Yes.
Can you use it for MnLARS?
Yes.
So well, your memory is very good.
Hey, Representative
if I recall, Madam Chair and members, yeah, we could direct them to do that, and oftentimes they look to us for direction on where to put those pots of money. And I think last year we actually did move some around within their jurisdiction. I'm just going to note for the committee that we've done this. I think it's probably money that will be put to work that was sitting in an account somewhere, but we should just ponder that a little bit, I guess. Thank you for the explanation. I appreciate
Madam Chair and Representative Beard, I will be pondering that over the weekend.
Okay.
Or maybe before 6 o'clock today.
Okay. Mr. Lee, would you like to proceed?
Madam Chair and members, the next change item is on line 32. That is increasing, it is making a general fund appropriation for Safe Routes to School in MnDOT, and that's $500,000 over the biennium, and it continues in the tails. The next change item is on line 42. This is a one-time use of general fund dollars to clean up a contaminated site, Page and Hill. And the one thing I will note is that it's also in the governor's recommendation that doesn't show up in this sheet, but it is a governor's rec. On the next page, there's a number of change items for state roads in MnDOT. Line 58 is increased commodity costs out of trunk highway. That comes to $10 million over the biennium. And this is also a governor's change item. In program planning and delivery, there's two change items, but one is split between general fund and trunk highway. The Rochester Development Transportation Study, $75,000 is from the general fund, $100,000 is from trunk highway.
Okay, just one moment, please. Representative Beard, would you like to pause here and ask a
yes.
question?
Yes. Actually, need to step back to line 58. Mr. Lee or Mr. Chairman, the increased commodities costs, is that an anticipation of the cost of something going up? Usually those are just reflected in the price of the bids going up, aren't they? Or what are we doing here?
Mr. Lee?
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, I believe this... This is an anticipation of, maybe this would be a better question for MnDOT, but I believe it's an anticipation of higher construction costs, salt, the commodities.
Is that what they're talking about?
Representative, okay, go ahead, Representative
Hornstein. Madam Chair, Representative Beard, the history of this was in a governor's recommendation for the agency. Yeah. You know, I think that my understanding is exactly what Mr. Lee had proffered. But, you know, if you want more details, then that's totally understandable. The agency could certainly explain that better than anyone.
Yeah. Representative Beard?
Somebody pointed out to me that salt was also a commodity, and I guess there is a book here that's got explanations in it as well.
Madam Chair, maybe...
Yes, there we go. Salt, okay. Sand, and highway stuff.
Okay, Representative Hornstein.
And Madam Chair, maybe more specifically, I think we're learning that silica is also a commodity. <Just
that>. Okay.
He's got some down there.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, you're welcome. Go ahead, Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and members, and if you'd like more detail on the governor's change items, direct you to this binder. It's on page 8, the first change item, operations, maintenance, and increase. Next change item in program planning and delivery is a Quarters of Commerce implementation study, and that is funded with general fund money, $100,000, and both the Rochester Development Transportation Study and the Quarters of Commerce implementation study are one time for fiscal 14.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Earhart.
How does the trunk highway money, is that generally used for studies? Isn't that unusual?
Mr. Burris?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, yes, trunk highway funds have gone towards research. Actually, the Center for Transportation Studies annually receives a portion of the trunk highway funds for highway-related research.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair, members, the next change item is... again, under program planning and delivery, this is a research item for the Humphrey Center and the Center for Transportation Studies, and that's $150,000 a year, $300,000 over the biennium, and that's paid out of the general fund. Then there's a governor's change item on line 84, that's program planning and delivery, RDC funding, for the MnDOT RDC regional district councils at $900,000 a year or $1.8 million over the biennium. That continues in the tails.
Madam Chair, is there any point
Earhart.
In having MnDOT explain what they're talking about when I say program planning delivery concisely? You know, you don't have to give a long litany on some of these things, but...
Representative Earhart, I appreciate you asking that question. I was interested in that, too. So did you want to call someone from MnDOT down to just briefly explain that?
It could just as well be a MnDOT person that knows the lexicon here sitting up there, and somebody has a question
okay.
to ask.
Could someone from MnDOT like to come down and answer that question?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, you're welcome. Mr. Peterson?
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And Representative Earhart, would you please repeat the question for me?
Well, I was interested, Madam Chair, and Mr. Peterson, in what program planning and delivery RDC funding, what does that mean?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, negotiate contracts with the regional development commissions across the state of Minnesota to help us with transportation planning. And we have negotiated an expanded scope of their activities that they're going to perform for us. And so we've been spending about $600,000 a year on these contracts, and so the increase, I believe, is actually about $300,000 a year. So some of the things that they do for us is, help coordinate MnDOT trunk highway planning with local road authority transportation planning and those kinds of things, because they're out in areas and they assist our MnDOT districts with transportation planning. So we are, they supplement our activities.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Earhart, thank you. And then, Mr. Peterson, if you could just stay there for a moment. When you talk about RDC, are they a they're not a nonprofit. I'm assuming they're a private consulting firm, or how does are they have an executive director and you have to staff it? What is their entity?
Madam Chair, I'm not completely familiar with how they're formed, but they are a public entity. They're like a multi-jurisdictional organization that engages in planning and development activities in primarily in Greater Minnesota, and I think they have them in most areas of Greater Minnesota, except I think in there are a couple areas that don't have them, but we contract with other organizations to provide some of those same activities.
Okay, thank you, Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair and Mr. Peterson, would that be like Region 9 in the Mankato area?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not sure of the number of the region, but it sounds like a reasonable.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm familiar with Region 9. That serves South Central Minnesota, and it's governed by local county commissioners. They support smaller communities in a number of ways, like helping them with grants to do sewers, a little bit of economic development, and they take a regional approach. Where I live, it's a very important organization and serves our communities really well. So. It's a public entity.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Mr. Lee, it looks like you may proceed. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, the next change items are state road construction on lines 91 and 92. The MAP 21 federal changes, this is spending money that is in the trunk highway account from the federal government. And that is $263 million a year, in this biennium, and it's one time. The next change item is Bed Roads, ADA, and Sims improvements, again, out of Trunk Highway. And this is $95 million one time in 2004, and that is paying down the Trunk Highway balance for those programs. Moving on page 3, line 99, Economic Recovery Funds, ARA. This is both the governor's recommendation, and it's in House File 1444, the DE6 amendment, that spends federal money of $1 million a year until fiscal 16, and this is remaining stimulus money that MnDOT has applied for. On line 105 and 106, economic development change items, I'll note a difference between the governor's recommendation and the DE6 amendment. On the governor's recommendation, there was $10 million a year or $20 million over the biennium in general fund money spent on the TED program. And in the DE6 amendment, it split $5 million between general fund and $5 million between trunk highway. So the total's the same, but it's split in two different accounts. And then there's no changes for highway debt service, electronic communications, county or municipal state aid roads.
Yes, Mr. Representative Beard.
Chair Hornstein, having walked this walk, I assume you did that because you had a general fund target you were trying to accommodate.
Correct, and just
Chair
some
Hornstein.
General fund priorities. And Madam Chair and Representative Beard, you know, we worked with MnDOT. I mean, there's reasons why they had this all in the general fund initially.
Yes.
But, you know, because the highway part is you can do through the trunk highway fund. But their approaches and other... other kinds of costs related to site preparation and other things that the trunk highway fund doesn't cover. So we felt that it could work with a mix of trunk highway fund and general fund. You know, it wasn't their preference, but, you know, this general fund money is pretty precious these days.
Understood. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mr. Lee.
On page 4, and that concludes MnDOT. On page 4, the Metropolitan Council, here again I will note a change from the governor's budget. And the governor's budget, he'd assumed $46.8 million over the biennium decrease for out of the general fund for Metropolitan Council bus and rail operations. And in the DE6 amendment, there isn't a decrease, so that is at the base level of $129.8 million over the biennium. And in the DE6 amendment, there is...
Okay, just one second, Mr. Lee. We have Representative Mensa.
You could finish up with that. Okay. I actually wanted to go back to the 112, 13, and 14.
Okay, let's do that, and then we'll go back.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Lee.
Then just the other thing I noted is the $100,000 in general fund for Transitway Implementation Plan under Met Council.
Okay, so Representative Mensa.
I just had a quick question for whoever can answer. I'm guessing in the 112, 13, and 14 on page 3, the highway debt service is the interest we spend on the bonds, or is that for something else?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair, Representative Mensa, it's both interest and principal.
Okay. And have we refinanced everything we can with interest rates low?
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair, Representative Mensa, I think that would be a question for MnDOT.
Okay, if you don't, could we have someone from MnDOT come down and...
Scott can hit me later.
Okay. Well, it actually might be of interest to the whole committee, actually. Oh. So it's a very good question, Ms. Representative Mensa, and we would like MnDOT to answer that to the whole committee. That would be helpful. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Peterson, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mensa, you know, I know that we have done a significant amount of refinancing from bonds that were sold, you know, several years ago, but I honestly don't know if every opportunity has been pursued. MMB manages our bond sales and repayments for us, so the amount that you see here in the appropriation bill is for the debt service transfer that we make to MMB every year for the bonds.
Okay, well, that would actually be a helpful question. Would you be able to find out that answer for us if that's happened? I think I saw heads nodding wanting to know that answer. Thank you. Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How can we have debt service that's less than the base in the same year?
And do you want to point that out, what line you're on?
Well, highway debt service on in 14 is base is $201,000, and we're authorizing $158 million, excuse me, and so forth.
Okay, so Mr. Peterson, are you on that line? Do you have the answer for that?
Yeah. 113, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks, Madam Chair. When we do our budget for debt service, you know, we're projecting out into the future when projects will begin construction and the progress that we make on projects, because we don't sell bonds until we actually anticipate getting an invoice from a contractor. So we encumber the project when the contract is awarded, but sell bonds as the construction project moves towards completion. And so part of the difference is related to a change in project schedules, a change in interest rates since our initial projection. And also we've changed the way that premiums on bond sales are treated. So when we sell bonds, they're put out for auction and the buyers bid the interest rate down. And then and some of that bidding down of the interest rates comes back to the state as a premium. And so we've changed the way that we book those premiums, and some of that is reflected in these lower debt service appropriations.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Lee, you can proceed.
The next change items are on page 4 under Department of Public Safety. And these are the soft body armor transfer items on lines 183 and 184. They're both governor's recommendations and in the DE6 amendment. and it's $92,000 a year transfer or from the general fund, and $100,000 from the trunk highway fund. And the trunk highway portion is for the state patrol.
Okay.
And the other on page 5, line 206, there's a change item that was both in the governor's budget and in the DE6 amendment, and that's for increased fuel costs for the state patrol. And that's $1 million a year or $2 million over the biennium. On line 219, this is the recommendations from the Capital Security Task Force of increased general fund spending $3 million over the biennium, $1.5 a year. And this is for the piece of the state patrol that is in the Capitol complex. That's paid for out of general fund. In driver and vehicle services, there are two change items on lines 236 and 237. They're both out of the vehicle services operating account, the special revenue fund, not general fund, and both are governor's recommendations. The first one, additional staff and vehicle titling, is to increase or decrease title transfer turnaround time. That's, I believe, 7 FTEs. And then there is an increase starting in fiscal 15 of $98,000 a year, and it increases to $423,000 over the 16-17 biennium for the DVS phone system replacement. And both of these are paid out of the vehicle services operating account. The next two change items, driver services, facial recognition implementation. Again, this is a governor's recommendation, and it is continuing $71,000 out of the special revenue driver services operating account, and that starts in fiscal 15 and continues into the tails. And there's also the DVS phone system replacement out of... out of the driver services account, that's the same as the vehicle services account. It's the same project, just two different pots of money that are paying for it. The final change item I'll note is on page 6, line 277, and that is. The estimated general fund loss for House File 1036, this changed the what's considered a valuable vehicle for salvage purposes, and this is the estimated loss of the general fund. And with that, Madam Chair, that's the change items.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. And Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lee, I know it's not a big pot of money here, but how does raising that... trying to track this early in the morning, how raising that impacts the general fund.
Mr. Lee.
Any idea?
I believe it's that, trying to remember from the fiscal, Madam Chair.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mr. Representative Beard.
Well, if it's easy, an easy one to answer, fine. If not, we'll catch up with you, unless the rest of the committee's dying to know, too.
So. I believe it was the estimated general fund loss from vehicles were considered, basically saying that there's a lower threshold for what vehicles are valuable, so the general fund wouldn't be making quite as much if more vehicles are considered lower value.
That okay.
Answers your question, Representative Beard.
I'll have to think that one through, Madam Chair. Okay. I'm sure it'll come to me here shortly. But.
Because there's a... Okay, let me just see if I can... So things are considered of less value, therefore we're not going to get as much income off of that. The base is lower, so we're not going to get as much income off of that from at the state level?
I believe so, Madam Chair. I would be happy to share the fiscal note.
Let's do that.
Okay.
And if it's something earth-shaking, I'll bring it back on Monday.
Thank you. It's one of those curiosity things that would be nice to understand. Okay. So, okay, now we have... Pat McCormick is here from DVS. Are you able to answer that question? Did you hear what the question was? You kind of.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. And members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. And the reason there's less money in the general fund is because then we don't, DVS does not anticipate that we would be doing the high-value vehicle inspections that our staff mm-hmm. do right now to ensure that they are fit to be driven and that any changes have been made to them for resale and so we or for titling. And so as a result, there's a lot there because we'd be there's a fee we charge for those inspections, and a lot of the money goes to the general fund. A portion of it goes to our special revenue account, but we're anticipating less inspections, and so that would be where the loss from the general fund comes from.
Got you. Okay, Representative
Madam
Beard.
Chair, the light just came on. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. I was confusing with this with the St. Paul initiative regarding cars that were being towed and shredded, and this mm-hmm. goes way beyond that. This is cars that are actually reassembled from wrecks and so on and then recertified. That's what this is about. Thank you, Madam Chair. That
okay.
helps understand.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick.
I have one question
okay,
for DVS.
Chair Earhart.
Madam Chair. Do you have enough money now to complete your computer changeover programming plan here?
Ms. McCormick?
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, we will have enough money by the end of 2016, which is when the fees, the special revenue technology fee, will no longer be collected. So that's the our contract is based on the amount of money that we are collecting to be able to do that, as well as for the additional staffing that we need in order to get that accomplished. So yes, as long as we're able to collect the fee, the technology fee, yes, we would have enough money to build our to complete the new system.
Madam Chair, are you talking about if you had more money, you could do it more expeditiously, or do we have to phase in the repairs and reconstruction of your system because the fees are coming in over time?
Okay, Madam McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, as you know, we signed a contract with a vendor in order to do this, and in order that contract lays out our design and implementation plan, and so we are doing that work with not only the vendor staff but also with the technical staff we currently have, as well as with our program staff, and so we do need to complete it according to the contract. There would be additional costs if we did it, and we wouldn't have enough money if we changed it at this point in time.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'm wondering if by 2016 it might be outdated and we have to start over. It would be better to shift some of this money around that we're giving away to other things than
Ms. McCormick.
Things. I don't know.
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, I think that there's a good reason why we're doing it in the order that we are doing it. We've started with foundational pieces, and then we're adding on the pieces that we need in order to change the business. But I can tell you that the major goal of our system is that it be flexible, unlike the current one we have. And so it's being built so that we should be able to react to legislative changes and make them accordingly, so that we don't have the problems that we've had previously with a system that's very fragile and is unique in how it's programmed and takes a long time for us to reprogram anything that's fairly complicated.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. since we have you up here, I was just kind of circling back to the additional driver vehicle services staff that we're going to increase 7 FTEs. And I realize that, you know, even in the notes here, it says that titling had taken as much as 87 days, and our goal is to get it to 30. And I recall last time you were here, you were saying you had made some improvements. And can you just refresh my memory as far as how many days are we down to now and what the 7 FTEs will, you know, is all 7 needed and how many staff you have now? And can you, if you just refresh my memory about that?
Okay, Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative, we currently are, at this time, we're at 10-day turnaround time for titling. But we are, if you look over time and you look at how we are in our usual title production, this is our slowest time of the year. And so we're not anticipating that. Our goal is certainly to keep it as low as we can. But our goal is to make sure that we're maintaining a 30-day title turnaround time at all times. New car titles are much less complex, but if we're looking at the overall title turnaround, we would like to maintain it at 30 days or less. The issue for us is that it is this point in time that is the slower time, and that we have been working with a process engineer that is, we are tracking production, and as I've told you before, we've changed our training process, but we also are at a time right now where we expect a good number of our current expert staff are going to start retiring, and when we bring in new staff, it takes much longer to train them, and so the titling statistics per new trainee are much lower than with people that have been doing it for years and years. It's usually like 10 titles an hour for a new person, and for a person who's been here for quite some time, it could be almost double that. And so that's why we believe that, of looking at these statistics, that we will need an additional 7 staff in order to meet the volumes of our customers.
Hello. Okay, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, and how many staff do you have currently doing the titling?
Ms. McCormick?
I don't have that number offhand. I can look it up for you. I think that whole area has around 60 people working in title and registration, but they're not all issuing titles. There's other activities that are being done. I can get back to the committee and to you on that.
Thank you. I was just curious as to the
Representative O'Neill.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm so sorry. I was just curious as to the percentage increase, and when you do get to those slower times, is there other things that staff, those additional 7 staff, will be doing then, so that we don't have
an efficient use? Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative, we are never not busy. We always have additional projects that we work on. We also have work that we need to do related to the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. And so we are always able to utilize the staff that we have. Certainly, I can get back to you with more details if you'd like.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Okay, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to belabor this, but I guess I would also be interested in finding out from data regarding what your overtime rate and the like is. I know this is a slack time, but it seems like if you can get to 10 days with this, that you're looking at a greater than 10% increase in the number of people that you'll have on staff in that particular area. That's a pretty large increase. You know, typically most companies, when they experience a seasonal change, will hire temporary people to do some work in order to accommodate.
Okay.
But I guess I'm not interested in setting ourselves up for a lot of inefficiencies. If we can get 10 of them done by expert employees, you know, I guess you'd have to wonder. I know you're going to bring people in to take care of those retirements. They should have 90 days to get up to 10 per. I mean, it's not like 10 years to get that done. So I'm only hopeful that you're mindful of the fact that we don't want to build in inefficiencies either. As far as the goal, laudable, to get to 30 days. But if we're at 10 right now, that just seems like a lot of people to add on. Thank you.
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair, the only thing I would want to add, and Representative Benson, is we are utilizing overtime right now in addition to the staffing that we have. and we have been utilizing overtime.
Okay. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my interest would be in is how much, and I also know that a certain amount of overtime is less expensive than hiring brand new people, just simply from the fact that you're going to pay benefits to the brand new people that you don't on overtime rate.
Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair, certainly I respect your comments, Representative Benson. At the same time, you can also burn out staff when you're doing overtime all the time, which we have been doing a lot of overtime. And so there is some, in looking at our statistics and work patterns, there is a certain amount of overtime that, yes, we can offer, and staff appreciate the overtime, but we also need to ensure that we're not burning people out and then they're leaving and looking for other jobs. So,
okay, Ms. McCormick, I just want to clarify for myself. So currently if someone purchases a car and brings it to the Driver's License Bureau, you apply for, well, you change your title. How many days, how long does it take to get that new title in the mail at your home?
Madam Chair, right now you would go to a deputy registrar and they would then submit the paperwork. And so once we receive the paperwork from the deputy registrar, then it's a 10-day turnaround, which means we are turning it around, printing the title, and it's being put into the mail. So,
okay, that hasn't been experience that I have known of. So that's very interesting. That's okay. Thank you. So, any other questions? Okay. Representative Metza?
It's not about that.
That's okay.
So.
That's good.
Okay. Kind of switching gears, I just wanted to make one comment. I know earlier this year I did as well. That's one other area I'll disagree with the governor with the facial recognition system funding. I just don't think that's, you know, I love Jack Bauer in 24, but... don't think our government should be working on it. So,
okay, Chair Hornstein, how would you like to proceed? Are you expecting more discussion on the bill, or?
Well,
what
I'm
do
happy
you?
To answer any other questions. Okay. You know, we had obviously some policy items in here and some studies and things of that nature. So, if the committee has questions of me, I'm happy to answer those. Otherwise, we could get to the public testimony.
Right. Okay.
Preference.
Okay. Well, I don't see anybody wanting to ask some more questions. So, with that, we'll move to our public testimony. And okay, we have Amanda Dewar with the Highway 14 Coalition and Margaret Donahue from Transportation Alliance on deck. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Dewar.
Thank you. My name is Amanda Dewar, and I'm here representing the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership on behalf of the 18 local government entities and 45 business members of our organization. Mr. Chair, let me first offer our sincere appreciation for your demonstrated support towards making progress on Highway 14, your leadership in developing the Corridors of Commerce program, and your commitment to a transportation investment that addresses the needs of the entire state. The U.S. Highway 14 Partnership has been in this committee several times this year and many times in years past, highlighting the safety concerns and economic deficiencies of Highway 14. Though our stories of lives and economic opportunity lost on Highway 14 seem to resonate, for over 40 years, the regional centers served by Highway 14, Rochester, Owatonna, Waseca, Greater Mankato, and New Ulm, have all been repeatedly told that there are insufficient transportation resources available to complete this important economic corridor, and we'll just have to wait longer. So while we're pleased to see that the enabling language for the Corridors of Commerce program is included in this bill, legislators and advocates of Blake have all been told that the needs facing Minnesota's transportation system greatly outweigh the existing resources. That being the unfortunate reality, the status quo funding levels included in this bill don't equate to progress on Highway 14, or 169, or 694, or 23, or 10, which is disappointing. With resources, the Corridors of Commerce program could have provided a real mechanism to complete some of these long overdue highway projects that are the backbone of our state's economy. I ask the committee to please reconsider this bill and make a necessary statewide investment in Minnesota's transportation infrastructure and begin to fund the Corridors of Commerce program. The Highway 14 Partnership is fully prepared to help build support for this effort. Our local government officials and business leaders have publicly advocated for a transportation investment by reaching out to newspapers, radio, and television media, developing local grassroots public relations effort, packing the halls and community forums, and contacting legislators, the governor, and MnDOT about the regional importance of this project. Despite the setbacks that have occurred this session, the Highway 14 Partnership remains united in our efforts to complete a four-lane corridor between New Ulm and Rochester. So you'll be seeing us again next year and every year thereafter until our highway is finished. Again, Mr. Chair, the Highway 14 Partnership greatly appreciates your efforts, and no, this is not the bill that you intended to move forward this legislative session. Thank you for traveling to Mankato to discuss your proposal. It meant a great deal to our members to know you cared about Highway 14, and I'm sure the folks in Willmar, St. Cloud, and the other greater Minnesota cities you visited to discuss your statewide transportation visit were equally appreciative. And finally, thank you for not only recognizing the unmet needs of our state's highway corridors, but having the leadership to develop a solution. If only everyone shared your vision, we would be discussing a much better bill today. Thank you.
Just a moment, Ms. Dewar, if you could just stay there for a moment. Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair and Ms. Dewar, I want to just, as a resident, as an ex officio or whatever, a citizen of Nicollet County, I want to thank you and all you have done and the coalition has done and my neighbors have done to really coalesce and work for a long period of time and to inform the public. I can't say how loudly, how well we know about Highway 14 in our community. When I first came here, I talked about a shared sense of sorrow in our community. It's real, it's hard to quantify, it's not commerce, it's not that sort of thing, but it's very real. And I'm not going to reiterate the stories, but I just want to affirm that. The second thing I want to mention is that we've heard in the news that, oh, we need to build support for a gas tax increase in order to fund highways. To me, the Highway 14 Coalition is a model of building that sort of support. And I know you just mentioned briefly, but if you could just extend a little bit about the depth of effort that has been made in southern Minnesota to build support. And I think it's, in my opinion, it goes beyond. It's not only along Highway 14, in my opinion. How long it's been working and how hard folks have worked. And just extend a little bit about the grassroots work to build a coalition in support of highway funding in south central Minnesota. Thank you.
Certainly, Representative Johnson, Madam Chair. Most recently, the governor held a town hall meeting down in Mankato. We had over 200 people from along the Highway 14 corridor surrounding communities go in and implore him to support a gas tax increase or any sort of funding to move this project forward. For several months, these individuals and businesses have been writing letters to all of you, I'm sure you've received them, the governor, the MnDOT, stating the importance of this project. We've got our local chambers, the New Ulm Chamber in particular, was on the radio the other day publicly advocating for a gas tax increase, asking its members to reach out to legislators and the governor. This same organization has done political cartoons, other local efforts with its Rotary Club and members just to drum up support for Highway 14. As you know, we've had many people come and testify before the committee, business interests, individuals. You know, this is a bipartisan business, local government collaborative effort in support of getting this project done. We've had two editorials this week, the Owatonna People's Press just this morning, the New Ulm Journal the other day, advocating for an increased investment in transportation statewide. So that's just a few off the top of my head.
Thank you, Ms. Dewar. Okay. Representative Metza.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of jump in. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for all your efforts thus far in pushing for a gas tax and a balanced rural metro spending package. I know it's been a difficult discussion with other folks that we're dealing with, but, you know, it really means a lot to us rural members that you've been working with us to see that through.
Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to Margaret Donahue with the Transportation Alliance, and then Dave Van Hattem for Transit for a Stronger Economy is on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And on behalf of our coalition of over 250 organizations, both public and private sector, that are all involved in transportation, we also want to thank the Chair for all of his work this session in raising awareness about the needs, in promoting the corridors of commerce concept, and working to put together what we thought was going to be a bill that would really move us forward in transportation and create jobs, excuse me, which I think is really what a lot of legislators ran on and have been really focused on, is improving the economy, creating jobs, attracting businesses to Minnesota. And we think that investments in transportation really are the key to doing that. Unfortunately, as the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee pointed out, we are $450 million a year short on our highway system just to maintain the highway system that we have. So under this kind of status quo funding, we can expect more deficient bridges, more pavement quality deteriorating, more congestion, fewer transit options, and really just more of a deterioration of our transportation system, because we need an increase just to maintain the system that we have. I wanted to share with you an article that I found that I thought the headline was very interesting given what's happening here, but this is from the Detroit Free Press. And the headline is that the transportation budget passes Senate committee without extra $1.2 billion called for by Governor Snyder. So other states are certainly grappling with this issue. Some of them are doing a good job, and some of them are more like, I guess, what's happening here in Minnesota. Governor Snyder in Michigan had proposed a plan that would have increased gas taxes and registration fees. It would have also asked the public to vote on an increase in a sales tax in order to provide $1.2 billion for transportation. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be going anywhere for them, but other states are making progress, and these are the states that understand the connection between transportation investments and economic development. Virginia is the state that has gotten the most media attention and the most acclaim from organizations like Moody's Bond Rating Agency because of their move to change their fuel tax to a sales tax on fuel. And that will mean that that revenue source will grow in the future. And Governor McDonnell in Virginia noted that the failure to properly fund transportation was hurting Virginia's economic competitiveness, it was hurting our citizens' ability to find good-paying jobs, and it was imperiling Virginia's critically important credit rating. So they took action. Maryland is the next state. Maryland has just passed a $3.4 billion transportation funding plan sent to Governor Martin O'Malley that also includes a 1% sales tax that will be applied to fuel purchases at the wholesale level that will increase. They've also indexed their fuel tax. So their 23.5 cent a gallon excise tax on gas will be tied to inflation. So it will grow in the future. Again, another state that recognized the need to do something big and to make sure that it will grow in the future. Wyoming just passed 2 months ago a 10 cent increase in their state's gas tax. Pennsylvania, Governor Corbett has a plan that includes a gas tax hike, and he is going around the state talking about the need to spend $1.2 billion on state-owned roads, $250 million more on mass transit, $200 million more for local roads and bridges, and $75 million more for a multimodal fund for trains and airports. So other states, Iowa is considering a 10-cent increase in their gas tax. Missouri, their Senate passed a plan to ask the voters for a constitutional amendment that would dedicate a 1-cent increase in their statewide sales tax, with that dedicated to transportation for 10 years. So other states are moving ahead, and those are the states that we think will be successful. They will create jobs, they will attract businesses, and we would like to see Minnesota be among those states that are forward-thinking, that are looking at the long term, finding ways to take care of their transportation system. So we hope that there's still time this session to consider an increase in revenue for both highways and transit statewide that will provide the kind of system we need and will create jobs. And that's also what we need right now. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Donahue. Okay, with that we have Dan Van Hattem, and I always have a trouble with his last name for some reason, and Transit for a Stronger Community. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got the last name right. It's Van Hattem. First name is Dave.
Dave. Oh, did I say Dan? Sorry. It's my husband's name. I'm just fond of it. Sorry. Okay, go ahead. So I just change names when I feel like it.
One.
No.
I missed it. So.
Okay, Dave. Sorry about that. Thank you.
I'm here on behalf of Transit for a Stronger Economy, a broad coalition of over 52 organizations statewide, over hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans, labor, developers, health interests, people with disabilities, community groups, all wanting to see the transit system build out as soon as possible, 15 years, not 40 or 50. Want to be and also expanding bicycle and walking options and ADA compliance. I want to be very clear from the onset that this coalition supports a comprehensive multimodal package, roads, bridges, transit, bike walks statewide. We also want to express our thanks to Chair Hornstein and others and really their leadership over many, many years. And as a fellow bus rider, rail rider, and biker, we appreciate your leadership. I just want to make three brief points about why this is so critical and why it needs to happen now. Number one, if we don't come up with a comprehensive funding package for transit, many key projects that we all want to see get done will not get done. Southwest Light Rail, Botno Light Rail, and East Metro Light Rail. Critical bus service into the evening, weekends, areas that aren't currently served. Our coalition's on record supporting a 3/4-cent sales tax in the metro to get that done. Second, expanding these options, transit, biking, and walking, is critical to our region and the state's economic competitiveness. We know that young people and employers want to locate where there's good transit and where there's walkable communities. We also know that we're far behind regional peers. Many peers like Denver, Dallas, Houston, San Francisco have built their system, a system of transit, and have done it with a regional sales tax. We did a poll, the chamber did a poll, both polls show that a majority of Minnesotans support the sales tax increase for transit. Third point is that equal access to opportunity should not depend on an $8,000 to $10,000 membership fee, what it costs to own and operate an automobile. 25% of the households in the Twin Cities don't have access to convenient transit. That means they don't have the opportunity to have an affordable option to save money, to invest in their children's education, to invest in housing. Far too many people don't have convenient, affordable, reliable options. So to close, we see some want to compliment the things that are positive in the bill in terms of funding for Greater Minnesota Transit, in terms of finding a way to offset the general fund cut, and want to recognize Representative Hausman's leadership in the geo bonding package for transitways. But none of that gets us where we need to go. We need to make far, far greater investments, and we urge all of you today to move towards that end. And like others have said, we have many, many organizations and people across the state who are fully committed to work with you, support with you on that effort. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Beard.
For Mr. Manhattan, just made a comment that I was going to let slide, but the more I think about it, the more annoyed I get. So I just have to comment on it. As a government, we've decided as a society we would build hard surfaced all-weather roads, and then people would exercise their responsibility to spend, I think you said, $8,000 a year to buy a machine to operate on them. Fair enough, I'll give you that. The insinuation seems to be that if government built a transit system, then people who choose not to spend that $8,000 to move themselves, there wouldn't be any investment. They could do that for free. And I'd submit to you that's completely an erroneous assumption. The rest of us that did buy a car have to pay again for the capital cost to build out this transit system that you have envisioned over the next several years, and, oh, by the way, to pay the subsidies to continue to operate it. Members, I just want you to remember, there is no free lunch. Somebody has to pay for it. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair. And that's kind of the, I kind of lead right into that, too, and that is, I'm inquiring as whether or not the transit organizations and those that are involved, if they are envisioning or would be willing to look at a little bit higher input into at least the maintenance and operation of the program, even once the infrastructure is done, at somewhere between 20% and 30% of the cost of operation is handled in fares. It does seem like that's a little bit unfair advantage, because when we're stretched trying to figure out where we're going to get the funding from, everything seems like it gets subsidized. And with automobiles, at least, more of the wear and tear and upkeep of the roads is paid directly out of automobile usage and fees and taxes. That does seem like there should be a little bit more skin in the game, shall we say, of those are transit riders. So I'm inquiring if you know if people are interested in paying a little bit more of the fair share in regards to fares.
Well, Mr. Van Hatten. Madam Chair and Representatives, it's a fairly complex topic to address subsidies and investment. But we know that in the state of Minnesota, the property tax funds roads to a greater extent than gas taxes. So the notion of subsidy isn't exclusive to transit. And I would also add that not Transit for Livable Communities, not any of the transit advocacy organizations, but the Itasca Project did a very detailed peer-reviewed study that found that every dollar we invest in public transit to accelerate this build-out of the transit system leads to $3 in direct economic benefits. So, you know, almost anything we do in this building is about investment. The key is, what is the return on that investment? We think transit has a very large return on investment. We think the future young people, companies want to come to places where transit. We think it's a very smart investment for the future. I actually, over the last couple nights, I've been pondering that notion of voluntary fares. I think it'd be interesting to ponder a fare box that says, you know, F-A-I-R, and those that want to contribute more, that might be an interesting concept. But today, transit riders do pay their fair share because we're getting benefits for the region and for the state.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And I know that debate about property taxes comes about all the time in regards to investment and infrastructure creation. But when you realize that then after that's created, the subsidy beyond that for operation, certainly if I had something that I invest with and I wanted somebody invest for me, in which later I get to use it at a very much reduced price, of course it'd be beneficial. The question is that can we maintain that type of inequity in regards to actual maintenance and operation? And I think that's the question. So just to follow up.
Okay. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are illustrating here exactly what the problem was for 20 years before they could raise the gas tax, in that there are certain advocates for roads, and we all are, and there are certain advocates for transit, which many of us are. And that's the thing that we've been talking about for most of the session, is that we need balance. We need to get some monies into both halves of the picture and make everybody happy somewhat, and then move on with it and build both roads and transit ways. And that's where we're at. We've thrown ourselves back. And incidentally, I think that once, perhaps when leadership and maybe the governor realize that we need a balanced program, we might be able to move ahead again instead of throwing us back 10 or 15 years when we're back struggling between Greater Minnesota, who would like roads, and for many, very many valid reasons, and the suburbs would need roads and transit, and the inner city who wants transit. So why don't we just decide that we're going to do a balanced plan somewhere here and move on with it? All we got to do is get the leadership interested in getting something done. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, okay, we have Representative Dean.
Well, I mean, I've been listening to this argument, thank you, Madam Chair, for quite some time. And, you know, in some ways, we do subsidize folks that take public transportation. Many of them are going to jobs where people own businesses. So literally, aren't we not subsidizing those businesses versus the individuals that are getting on transit to get to their job? So I think we need to really sort of reframe how we think about this, quite frankly. We see that as a subsidy to those individuals. I would contend that these individuals that are going to jobs is really a subsidy to that business and that employer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Van Hattem.
Thank you.
And then we are going to go a little bit off of schedule here briefly because of people needing to leave, and I also need to get to another hearing. And Hennepin County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I'm chair of the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority and also chair of the county's Transit Improvement Board, the five-county group that imposed the quarter-cent sales tax that has invested in the expansion of the transit system. I want to join the others here who have applauded the leadership of the chair and other members of this committee, and I know people who were here from day one in terms of the build-out of the transit system. I want to thank them for the leadership and their efforts to create a balanced package for transportation in the state of Minnesota. This is an issue that's absolutely critical to the future of the state. You know, if you think back to the history of Minnesota after the Second World War, infrastructure investment was one of the keys to creating a state that has outperformed the national economy on average year after year after year. You start with the international airport, the highway system that was built after the Second World War, the freeways, the county roads, the 1958 law that created the funding for county roads across the state that united this state. These are foundational investments that we're still reaping the benefits of, and we need to make a 21st century reinvestment in the new wave of infrastructure that we need to keep this state economically competitive. I was a member of the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee that the governor put together, and that group identified the need to make investments in roads and transit. That was the essential package, and they identified that as absolutely essential to the economic health of the state and the region. That's the unfinished agenda. You heard mention of this Itasca study. This was done by the business sector, and they looked at the build-out of the transit system. If you build out Met Council's plan, there's a greater than 9% internal rate of return on that public investment. Now, that's a internal rate of return that would attract private capital. So we believe it ought to be attracting public capital so we can build it out. That internal rate of return is actually higher if you build it out quicker. So the documentation is there from the business community. The federal framework, MAP 21, the new law, actually recognizes the desirability of regions building out full systems of transit and building them out faster. We're supportive of that notion, but to do that, to make the federal government a full partner, we need to have a local vision, a plan to carry it out, and the financial resources to match the federal resources. That's what we need to do on the transit side. We have attracted, since the creation of CTIB by the act of the legislature in 2008, over $500 million in federal transit money that would otherwise have gone to Denver, Phoenix, Portland, you name it, other places around the country. So we've been effective in that way. And so on the road side, there are huge needs. And the counties have an interest in that as well. We have a huge road system, a lot of bridges in Hennepin County that we're responsible for. I remember, as a county board member back in 2008, going down and visiting county commissioners along Highway 14. And there was a desire to get that project done. Frankly, I can go back to when I was a member of the legislature in the late 80s. There was discussion of the need to finish Highway 14. So we understand that there's an unfinished agenda here. We want to, again, thank the leadership of the chair in particular, but other members of this committee over many, many years in trying to create that balanced package to move the state of Minnesota forward. And we're ready to work, continue to work with you to make that happen in the days ahead. So thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your testimony. I think I heard something that was kind of interesting in which you said the rate of return by the Itasca group said that the rate of return would be 9%, which would be something even the private sector would get involved with. Maybe that's a better way to handle it. Let's let the private sector deal and build it and invest it, and it frees up more dollars for us as well. Is that what you were implying?
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg. The problem is that the benefits of transit investment don't directly flow to the investors. There are many other benefits that don't get monetized that can't be captured by those who invest. So there's a market failure that requires a public investment. And that public investment, that's what the analysis was, that the public investment would produce an internal rate of return of in excess of 9%. But as I remember my economics class, there's a mark. If the benefits don't inure to the investor, then the market fails, and that's really what we have here, and that's why you have a public good, a public investment to take care of.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner McLaughlin. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
And next, we're going to go to Rachel Callahan from the American Heart Association and Dorian Grilly with the Minnesota Bicycle Alliance. And then on deck will be Tim Werke of the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. Okay, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Callahan, and I'm the Regional Vice President of Advocacy for the American Heart Association. I also chair the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids Coalition. That's a statewide coalition that works on childhood obesity. And I'm also here on behalf of our Safe Routes to School Coalition, which is you'll be getting a handout of that membership of our Safe Routes to School Coalition. I want to just start out quickly talking about and commending you all for funding the Safe Routes to School program in your bill. This will go a long way towards helping communities plan and implement safe routes to school in their communities. I've provided a list of our Safe Routes to School members for the coalition, and you'll see there are 37 members there, and they represent a very broad range of interests. And if you think about the different interests they represent, those are all very good reasons why we want to support Safe Routes to School. From the Heart Association's perspective, our goal is promoting health, preventing heart disease and stroke, and so our goal is to get people physically active. So if kids can walk and bike to school, that's one way of doing that. One particular issue that I do want to highlight for you is the issue of childhood obesity. The impacts are far-reaching, so much so that it has become a national security issue. Last year, Representative Hortman pointed out a report released 2 years ago called Too Fat to Fight. It was released by Mission Readiness, which is a nonprofit group of retired military leaders. And I just want to update you, they released a new report that I have right here. It's called Still Too Fat to Fight. And they found that 1 in 4 young adults are too overweight to join the military. So 1 in 4 of our young people are too overweight. And in fact, overweight is the number one reason, medical reason, that people are not admitted to the military. So your leadership will definitely help on Safe Routes to School, will definitely help to solve this problem. I also want to express the American Heart Association and the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids Coalition support for dedicated resources for bike and walk infrastructure, both groups are part of the Transit for a Stronger Economy. We hope to work with the committee to ensure those resources are included in a comprehensive transportation bill. More than two-thirds of Minnesotans support including funding for walking and biking. A poll conducted in January 6 through 9 of 2013 of this year asked 500 Minnesota voters this question. Minnesota legislators and Governor Dayton may consider options for increased funding for roads and transit during the upcoming legislative session. Would you favor or oppose including in these proposals additional funding for bicycle and pedestrian connections? The results were that 34% strongly favored and 35% somewhat favored. So 69% of those polled were in support of funding the bike walk strategies. Biking and walking reap huge benefits both in safety and health. Adding sidewalks and bicycle routes reduces the risk of serious or fatal crashes. 45 of 306 of the road fatalities in 2011 were people walking or biking. That's 12% of those fatalities. Yet there is still no dedicated state funding for walking and biking. The Department of Public Safety estimates that the economic costs of a traffic fatality are more than $1.4 million, and a severe traffic injury costs an average of $69,000. In terms of health, studies have found that for every dollar invested in walking and biking routes, nearly $3 in medical cost savings may be achieved due to reduced costs associated with physical activity. So I offer our assistance in any way that we can to help you achieve the bike walk goals for a comprehensive transportation system. And with that, I will close. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Mr. Grilly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm with the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota, a statewide nonprofit. We have members all over the state, including a growing network of volunteer cycling instructors working with schools, businesses, and others to teach safe cycling. I'm here to encourage you to support bike ped funding in general and the dedicated funding that's been proposed. It's important to the health of individuals, communities, the environment, and our economy. Specifically, I'm here to thank you for your support or including the $500,000 for Safe Routes to School non-infrastructure in the bill. I'm glad to see that you've recognized this need. MnDOT, the Department of Health, the Regional Development Commissions, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Bicycle Alliance, and others have been busy creating a demand for these funds. Unfortunately, this is coming at a time when MAP 21 has reduced that funding, the federal funds available for this. MnDOT's infrastructure, non-infrastructure Safe Routes to School grant requests have always exceeded the funds available, and that gap is increasing. Rachel mentioned the reasons this funding is needed. As a father, I think the fact that epidemiologists are warning us that we are in danger of raising the first generation to have a lower life expectancy than the previous generation is reason enough to do this. I think we need to do everything we can to prevent that from happening. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate your testimony. And we will move on now with Tim Werke from the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota, and Sherry Munyon from Minnesota Public Transit Association is on deck. And thank you, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Werke. We are going to, I have another, votes being taken in another committee, so I'm going to switch with Chair Earhart here for the time being. So thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Okay. Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, appreciate the opportunity to appear before you. Again, for the record, my name is Tim Werke. I represent the Associated General Contractors. Let me say, first off, that I appreciate this discussion. You all have a very, very difficult proposition, and it comes back to balance. And you've heard that multiple times today. And it's one of the themes that I want to echo as well. But I want to thank the committee and the chairman for his hard work in trying to craft a path that brings about balance in this bill. But I wanted to illustrate for you, as I said, I represent the Associated General Contractors, and we have both highway and building contractors, and we oftentimes get pegged in this debate as, oh, you're the highway guys. But I would submit to you that's not the case, and I'll illustrate. Last night we had a quarterly meeting where I addressed 150 of our members and gave them a legislative update, and I spent considerable time talking about transportation funding. And I got asked a question. Why do we spend so much time, and this came from a vertical builder, why do we spend so much time talking about transportation? And my answer was simply that when we build public infrastructure, the private investments for other building construction occurs. All you have to do is think around this metro region or around the state of where we've made those investments, whether it's the Bloomington Ferry Bridge or whether it's the ramps in the interchange at the Mall of America, whether it's Highway 610, whether it's Highway 52 in Rochester. It is about building that infrastructure, which gives the opportunity then for hospitals to be built, for shopping malls, for schools, for various other construction, and that's what this is about. This is about investment today to build tomorrow's economy, and that investment has both direct results in jobs for the folks that work in construction, but jobs for tomorrow's private sector in building that economy. So that's the focus of what I wanted to leave you with, but I also wanted to talk about briefly about the failure to make those investments. Because right now there is no better time in this economy to invest in infrastructure. You've heard this before, but we have a very competitive bidding environment right now. The bids that you see coming into government agencies are often very low, very, very much lower than the engineer estimate, reflecting a competitive, aggressive marketplace. You're getting good value as a public owner. The commodity inputs are stable. Things like concrete, steel, those inputs are stabilized. But I think the most important thing is we have a ready supply and an oversupply of skilled construction tradespeople in the state that are looking to go to work, and we're ready as contractors to put them to work. And frankly, what is happening is that those folks chase the jobs, and they're leaving the state, and they're going to other markets. North Dakota is a perfect example. And they will stay, and they will not come back, and that is a concern to us as an industry. I encourage you to continue to work hard on this bill. We are disappointed that it is basically a lights-on bill. We would like to see a more aggressive level of investment. We encourage the discussions to continue, but we know it's a difficult discussion. But we stand ready to work in a coalition with our partners for both investing in transit and highways to bring about that balance. So that concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Thank you, Mr. Werke. Any questions for Mr. Werke? Ms. Munyon?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sherry Munyon, and I represent the Minnesota Public Transit Association. These are transit operators across the state. MIPTA is a member of Transit for a Stronger Economy and also a member of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. I want to first thank you for the language removing the referendum for Greater Minnesota Counties, and also thank you for the increased appropriation for Greater Minnesota Transit. I do have a handout here, and just call to your attention on this chart that without the increased appropriation, we would be looking at decreased service hours throughout Greater Minnesota in the next biennium. There are significant inequities outside of the seven-county metro area where we have only a handful of cities that offer evening or weekend service to their citizens. Eight counties have only municipal public transit service, excuse me, and two counties have absolutely no public transit service. Over 50% of the riders in Greater Minnesota are using the bus for work and school trips. It's no longer just for social service trips. We are, however, disappointed that the bill does not include the metro area sales tax. We have been supporting that for the entire session. We are strong believers that the increased investment in the metro region of $300 million a year is needed to build out our transitway system and to grow the bus system by 4%. Many of the communities in the metropolitan area will not have rail or bus rapid transit and will continue to rely on bus service, which is the backbone of our transit system. In addition, we continue to support the fund that was proposed for local governments to use and implement for bike, walk, ADA compliance, and enhanced local bus service. The bill we envision for this session would include and provide jobs as well as provide more transit access to jobs. Increased operating dollars are imperative to go along with the capital investments we are making. These operating funds are very important to Metro Transit, suburban transit operators, and other contracted operators working together to meet the needs of the metropolitan area. In closing, I want to say that my transit operators drive buses on roads, and they expect the roads to be in good repair and to be safe. They don't want to be faced with increased maintenance expenses from riding on roads in grave disrepair. MIPTA continues to support a gas tax increase, the metro area sales tax increase, and $45 million a year for Greater Minnesota Transit. I hope we can all continue to work towards that goal during this legislative session. Thank you.
Questions for Ms. Munya? Thank you. Abby Breidach, next, please. While she's coming down, there was an interesting article in the morning paper about the Senate's, at least I thought it was, Senate's tax initiatives, one of which was to take another look at the sales tax in the metro area and expanding that and driving down the overall tax. That is now a 6.5 plus whatever they charge you in Minneapolis and surrounding venues here. And they were advancing that again, which was the one that, of course, the governor bailed out of when he decided that there was so much pressure from the business community on the business to business. But I think that's an interesting concept. I think it's one that we really need to do, maybe not now, but very soon, to readjust our tax structure in the state. And if you drive the overall rate down, you have more room now for what is being suggested as quarter cent sales tax, excuse me, additional 0.5 sales tax on the governor's position for the transit tax. And it would seem to me that we should pursue that, not here, but be thinking about it in the taxing areas of the state, which are Senate and House at this juncture. Anyway, for that little bit, welcome to the committee, Ms. Breidach.
Thank you for the extra time. My name is Abby Breidach. I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And AMC would like to sincerely thank Chair Hornstein and Chair Earhart and others for their leadership and persistence and passion on this issue. I have a mixed message for you today. Of course, we're disappointed to see a small package, but we greatly appreciate the inclusion of the wheelage tax expansion and the referendum removal for the Greater Minnesota sales tax for transportation uses. Both these methods will empower Greater Minnesota to use some funding sources that can reduce their property taxes and also allow metro counties to use the wheelage tax as a user fee to increase funding for their own local road needs. On the other hand, counties desperately need an infusion of new revenue to maintain their road and transit systems, as you know. In the last 2 weeks, over 50 counties have county boards have passed resolutions in support of new transportation funding, and many of you should have received these via email from AMC or directly from your counties, and they continue to come in every day from members from other counties who have looked at this. We'll continue to with these resolutions, letters to the editor, and other methods to show those ultimate decision makers that this is something that Minnesotans want, Minnesotans need, and that they are willing to pay for. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Breidach? Thank you.
Present for me, not
there. Next up is Mr. Tennyson, former Senator Tennyson. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Robert Tennyson. I represent the I-35W Solutions Alliance. It's a joint powers board of Hennepin, Scott, and Dakota counties, and the cities of Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, Burnsville, Savage, Lakeville, and Elko Newmarket. Our organization supports a balanced transportation funding system and a multimodal system, and it has. This bill, despite all the efforts, does not meet our current needs, and it does not meet the needs that we should provide for our future generations. We inherited a road system from our ancestors that was paid for. That worked pretty well through the 80s. Whenever the Transportation Committee came in and said they needed a couple cents, they got it. And it was not a partisan issue. We funded the system on a cash and carry basis. And it's very important to have a funding system that maintains the system. 35W is a major transportation corridor in the state. We have 205,000 vehicles a day on 35W at Lake Street. $10,000 are heavy trucks. We have 14,000 passengers a day on buses passing that point. That's 7,000 morning and 7,000 evening, roughly. Most of them are there in that time. That takes a lot of cars off the road. We have major needs in that corridor. And I'm not pointing this out to jump the queue. The queue is long. You've heard that. We have two major projects that need to be funded. One is the Lake Street terminal and rebuilding of that area. That includes rebuilding two flyover bridges just north of there that are structure critical. We also have a need to rebuild the interchange at 35 and 494, which is a 1950s structure. It's inadequate. We also need to have an inline station at 82nd Street or American Boulevard in Bloomington, along with the one at Lake Street, to implement bus rapid transit, which this legislature and the governor, previous governors have authorized. We can't do it until we have those built. Those two projects alone exceed $500 million. You've heard the other needs that have been expressed. Now, I want to stress, we inherited this system from our ancestors. And as a young man, when I was I got out of the Air Force and worked in construction and during college, which was a side benefit from the thing. I worked on Interstate 90 at Worthington in Laverne. I worked in South Dakota on Interstate 29. I helped build those things 50 years ago. I worked a couple summers in Kansas building dams. They paid for my college to a large extent because there was no other means to do that. So there's a side benefit to employment, which is pretty clear to me as a person who benefited from that, and as a result was able to go to college and pay a lot more taxes than I would have otherwise probably had a better life. But we inherited this from our ancestors. They paid for it. Over the last, since 1988, the previous time we raised the gas tax to 2008, that 20 cents that was the tax levied in 1988, decreased in purchasing value to 12 cents. We've not made that up. So we've been falling behind. We've been living off what our ancestors gave us. We're living off our legacy. We're using it up. Now, what's your legacy going to be? Are you going to fund it for your children and grandchildren? Or are you just going to use it up? Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Tennyson? Thank you, sir. Will Shore, Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Earhart. My name is Will Schroer. I represent the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce and the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for a couple of minutes this morning. The chambers support just about everything that has been said so far. What I'd like to do, rather than repeat that, is to call your attention to two handouts in your packet. I believe that this committee has not seen officially the endorsements from the two chambers' boards of increasing the regional transit-dedicated sales tax up to 0.5%. The Minneapolis board chambers' endorsement was in the news a couple of weeks ago, and last night, and I bring this to you more or less as breaking news, the St. Paul area chamber also endorses up to 0.5% in transit-dedicated regional sales tax. And I just want to leave you with a very clear message on top of everything else you've heard this morning, that there are remarkable returns on investment available to the region, that the way to enjoy those returns on investment is to make the investment, and that the regional business community is absolutely dedicated to supporting you in moving forward to enjoy those returns for all of us, regional and statewide. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question for you. When you say Minneapolis Regional Chamber and the St. Paul Area Chamber, am I to understand that this represents a membership that extends beyond the city of Minneapolis and extends beyond the city of St. Paul?
That's correct. We're the two largest chambers of local and regional chambers of commerce in the state. The St. Paul Area Chamber goes east and north and south of St. Paul, and the Minneapolis Regional Chamber includes under our umbrella directly the Northeast Minneapolis Chamber and the Bloomington Chamber of Commerce, and we share some administrative staff, but they also operate independently. Many of our members are west of Minneapolis proper, and although we don't have a formal resolution from Twin West, they're supportive of these options as well.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, and we've had some tremendous support from various local chambers this year, which has been phenomenal. I think one of the things where we may not have heard is from the state chamber, and can you give us a little bit of background on how they operate versus the local chambers?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for that question. I'm reluctant to speak for other people, but with that in mind, I'll tell you that our conversation with the state chambers around the subject has been very friendly and supportive. They see this as a regional issue and defer to the regional chambers on this subject.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you for your time. We really need these projects, and we're willing to pay for them. Thank you.
There's a bucket by the door. you can drop in your spare change for starts. Thank you. Representative, let's see. We have John Hosleyden from the Trucking Association.
Hey. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am John Hosleyden, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. We are a business group of over 720 company, and we have thousands and thousands of employees that we represent, and of course we are users of the system and we pay for them. And just very briefly today, we want to say we appreciate the bill before you today, and I know while we have grand ideas for newer things, we can't forget that the bread and butter issues of what we do are being taken care of by this bill. Funding the agencies to do licenses and permits and all of those things really keep commerce going, so we do appreciate that. We really do support the concept of a balanced bill. We strive for that. And so we are disappointed that we're not having a robust conversation about all of those pieces, because actually, as an organization, we feel the current mechanisms are the best. We support a fuel tax increase. We think the registration fee mechanism is solid. We think the sales tax tool is solid. But when we say balance, we don't like the alternative mechanisms. We're not excited about the wheelage tax in here, but it is. But we think those current mechanisms are the way to go, and to the degree that they are the focus of a package, certainly in future sessions, that's what we're going to be there talking about. you know, we do have the wheelage tax in, and of course the trucks are part of that, and I don't see any amendments to exempt trucks, but we would certainly suggest your consideration, largely because of how we can register our trucks in different states. But I also want to thank the chair and the author for the corridors of commerce and a recognition of freight. Freight is important to what we do, and to have that in the bill in the form that it is important to us. So, again, thank you for the chance to come before the committee. Thank you for the good work you do. Sometimes it's just sort of, in a football analogy, you got to do some of the basic blocking and tackling to keep the plays going, and we appreciate this bill, and it does just that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for the witness? Thank you, sir. Steve Novak, former senator, is he with MICA? Minnesota Intercounty Association. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, Steve Novak, representing the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I'll be brief and to the point. I also want to thank both chairs and all members of the committee for what has been, I think, a good session in terms of this committee diving deep into the details of transportation funding and all of the different issues that are affected by it. We want to specifically say thank you for the inclusion of the wheelage tax and the county transportation sales tax provisions without the referendum. That will allow for some progress in this area. Also, like others who've testified, we're disappointed it's not a more comprehensive bill. I believe personally that every member of this committee has come to understand the depth of the problem and the fact that the overall transportation system in Minnesota has been slipping on a 20-year grid, and that at some point now we've got to grab a hold of that and make the decisions. I think this committee still wants to do that. We're caught inside a pretty complicated political puzzle, and who knows, maybe there's still time to get that figured out. I know from my past experience I came to believe that on occasion in certain years over in the Capitol in the merry month of May, it can be a magical, mystical place, and who knows, there's still solutions that may come from that. We stand ready to try to help you with that, and we appreciate all the work you've put into this process, and still believe that you can come up with a even more comprehensive solution than House File 1444 is at this moment. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Novak? Thank you, sir. Rob Vanasek for the townships.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rob Vanasek on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships today. We want to thank Chair Hornstein, Chair Earhart, Chair Hausman for their vision and their leadership in building a bill that's more comprehensive than what we see today before us. We appreciate their efforts, both past and future, along with individual members of this committee who have helped educate their colleagues outside this room in the need for a comprehensive, balanced approach in funding our transportation needs. Transportation is truly a core function of government. It is economic development, and without increased funding from the users of the highway and road system, we're going to see property taxes continue to increase each year. We're going to continue to see road and bridges become more deficient, more functionally obsolete, and deteriorate. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you for appreciating the need for a balanced approach and continue to work on this.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Vanasek? No. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, excuse me?
Just had one quick question, Mr. Chair. Is the Minneapolis Chamber still here?
There was no specific question. They just wanted to know if you were still here.
Oh, I've got one for you.
Oh, okay.
Forgive me. We were being rude in the back. I apologize. I stepped out, so I might have missed something you already said, and I apologize for that in advance if that happened. But I was just wondering, as a chamber, if you'd be supportive of an increase in gas tax to help, you know, find the balance for rural metro, and if that might be a possibility over the next few years to work on the Minnesota Chamber and build a coalition with us to keep this conversation moving forward.
We at the chambers have obviously talked about the fact of the gas tax being debated out there. We have not taken a position on it. I think I'm well within the boundaries of our board's feeling in saying they are in no way opposed. It's just that we haven't taken a position on a particular amount, et cetera. And absolutely, our members use roads as much as anything else and are absolutely behind efforts to find new revenue to continue to not worsen the situation, certainly to improve it. We just don't have a formal position yet and absolutely open to developing one. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Beard, did you have a question for...
No, Mr. Chair, whenever we're ready to get back to just walking through the bill quickly, I have two or three questions for the author of the bill that I think, for the good of the committee, I'd like to ask. When we get to that point, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the committee, or should we move ahead with the questions or comments? Should we move ahead with the... Bill? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the Chair Hornstein, having walked this path, I sense the stress that's involved in putting this together. I'm very familiar with it. You're handling it well. I
Mr.
do.
Chairman, the stress is really from Mr. Burris and Mr. Lee.
I see we drove Mr. Burris out of here. I'm glad Mr. Lee's hanging on with us here. Mr. Chairman, I have a couple questions about the bill, just for further enlightenment, if I may. And I think the first question is probably on page, I'm drifting through it here, page 11 of the bill, on 11.3. This has to do with the turnbacks, I believe, the turnback fund. Was this a department request, an agency request, to be able to take money out of the CASA formula and put it in the Trunk Highway Fund here? Is that their request? Mr. Chairman, my phone is actually turned off, so you can't blame me today on that.
It's mine as well. Mr. Chair, I will just defer to Mr. Lee. I believe you are correct. But we have both Mr. Lee and Mr. Peterson. It's always an argument for infrastructure investment when this happens.
Okay. Cell phone was
great. Don't move. Okay. Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I don't believe this was a governor's change item, so I'm not familiar where this language would come from. I'd recommend that maybe MnDOT could speak to this.
Perhaps Mr. Peterson, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Representative Beard. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson again from MnDOT. Representative Beard, my understanding is this is actually an attempt to augment the financing plan for the 101 flood mitigation bridge
Enough
project.
Said, Mr. Chairman. You're serious, correct?
Yes, I am.
All right, thank you, Mr.
Representative Beard,
yes. Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, do you have concerns, Representative Beard? Do I sense an amendment to delete this? No.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the explanation. I appreciate that very much. Ms. Chairman, Chair Hornstein, on page 15, tech support services, and maybe Mr. Peterson should have stayed right here.
Yeah. Some of these would be better if he attempted.
Yes. And the reason I ask is we had a fascinating discussion yesterday in Ways and Means Committee about in the public safety finance bill, there was a number that was strangely close to this one, $3.8 million for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which it turns out has been apparently an illegal appropriation for us to make over the past several years, starting with Chair Molnow and then Chair Queasley and then Chair Fulberg and then Chair Leader and then Chair Beard, and now here we are.
So, Mr. Chair, I have a distinguished group of people to join in the slammer.
Yes, right, exactly. We're currently researching what the criminal penalties are for violating that law and what the statute of limitations is. But apparently, is this 3.8 for tech services, is this for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension appropriation for enforcing DWI law or so on?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Beard, we have DVS here, so, and DPS.
Will you cite your reference again, Mr. Beard?
On page 15, 15.6 is the number I'm questioning.
15.6.
Technical support services.
Yes, and then, and it's in reference to the discussion we had in Ways and Means yesterday, where actually public safety is trying to strike those references so we come into compliance. So you'll be the first one not to go to the slammer,
Chair Hornstein,
if the bill should prevail.
Mr. Chair, my name is Larry Freund. I'm with the Department of Public Safety.
Yes.
The reference you're making there on line 15.6, $3.8 million, that's not trunk highway funds.
Okay.
That's part of our department's technology division within public safety there. It's broken out between general fund, highway user tax, and there's some trunk highway funds, but this is not for the BCA.
This is not the BCA appropriation.
No, it is not.
I wanted to clarify that. I just wanted to call the committee's attention that there is, someone did flag that in public safety's bill, and there actually is language that will affect what we do here, and also over on page 18.11, the tort claim amount, which probably is not yours,
right.
Your responsibility, but is this committee's responsibility that we've annually put $600,000 in there for claims against MnDOT for falling rocks or things like that, which apparently also has been not legal. You're following precedence, Mr. Chairman, but know that somebody flagged it yesterday. So, and then I think I had one more question, and thank you for the explanation. Section 7 on page 25.22. Is this a continuation of the TED program, Mr. Chairman? Because isn't that already a program we have, or is this, there's some new language here. Does this further flesh out the TED program that's been in play at MnDOT for a couple years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I believe so, but it may be a change item from the governor in terms of policy language. I'm going to ask Mr. Burris to comment on that. Just gets settled in and immediately gets a question. Page 25, section 7.
Representative Burris? I'm Mr. Burris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, yeah, this is suggested policy language with a couple of modifications, but basically this was the policy language suggested in the governor's budget. And you probably are recalling a change made in a budget, I think the last time around, mm-hmm. that established a trunk highway economic development account and authorized the creation of an economic development program. That language consisted of a roughly one or two sentence, the commissioner shall establish mm-hmm. criteria and a program. This is kind of the fuller authorizing language, if you will.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That helps me help us understand that, because the TED account that was established a few years ago was one that was applauded by everyone, and I know it's had a few exercises it's engaged in. I think it's one that, thank you for continuing it, thank you for fleshing it out a little further. Mr. Chairman, I have one more question for the chair of the committee, if I may.
Representative Beard?
On page 32 of the bill, section 19, Transitway Expansion Implementation Program. Or plan. Mr. Chairman, a couple years ago, Senator Saltzman at the time and Representative Holberg had language that did something like this, that said if there's going to be a transit way, there has to be identification by the Metropolitan Council of where it's going to be, what it's going to cost, the funds are going to be identified, and where they're going to be come from, in particular the operating subsidy going forward. Is this, does this affect that language, and how so?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, you have a very good memory, and I actually called up Representative Holberg the other day just to let her know that, you know, this is this language is in here because, you know, if, you know, a sales tax is happens and there's a significant expansion, you know, we want to be able to address some of the goals that she had articulated, and I think this was bipartisanly vetted a couple of years ago. This was an initiative from the Minnesota State Chamber of Commerce, and there was interest in making sure that as we plan transitways, that we were able to, in the very early period of planning, be able to identify these costs. So this is very much modeled on that, and but we're in an, it's, you know, we grow, we evolve, and now that there's a, you know, a potential for a sales tax on the table, you know, this is language that, you know, should be we should be studying this in order to ensure that people are very clear about where these public dollars are going. So it's a some sunshine, some accountability, and this is not my understanding. This is not something. There are aspects and parts of this that the Met Council are currently doing, but not kind of pulled together in this quite this format. So that's really modeled after that bipartisan legislation from, I think it was either 2009 or 2011. I don't remember exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it took a couple of sessions to get it passed completely, but so I'm understanding this is like an expansion or fleshing out that
correct.
Intent a little further.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dean.
This isn't to the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Hartstein, I just want to thank you for your leadership the past few months and especially the past few weeks. It might have been easy for you to really think about the Metro because, after all, we represent the Metro, but you didn't. You were probably the strongest advocates for roads throughout the state of Minnesota. You could have taken an easy path and you didn't. I want to state that congestion is going to cost our region millions, if not billions, of dollars in the near future. Most of us received a letter from a turkey producer that talked about 94 alone costs them for a million pounds of, I'm sorry, chicken, million pounds of chicken, $250,000. That's 25 cents a pound for that chicken. So we end up paying for congestion. So we really do have a choice. We can pay to fund our infrastructure so that it works and works the way it should, or we can pay for it in our goods, our services, and the products that we purchase as consumers in the state of Minnesota. I personally don't want to have another bridge collapse before we get serious about the infrastructure in this state. And I hope that within the next few weeks, there are opportunities to look at possibilities to really make sure that we maintain our infrastructure and we move forward so our region can really be a region for the 21st century and not for the 20th century. Thank you again for your leadership.
Representative Mason.
Mr. Chair, I just would like to make a few comments. And first of all, to thank everybody that testified today. I truly appreciate all your support, and I can, from my perspective, I believe everybody at this table understands the importance of transportation to just literally every aspect of our life, but certainly it is so very critical to jobs, to economic development, and even more than that, and I brought this up before, it's life and death. I was on the committee when we did the 35W bridge, and every time, and I can tell you, every time there's an accident on Highway 14, you keep wondering, what more can you do? But the bottom line is, our committee is not operating in a vacuum. We're part of a whole, and maybe what I could ask is for your help to extend our sphere of influence, because I truly believe we've heard some remarkable programs this year, and certainly I think the Quarters of Commerce was really impressive, and I'm so very excited about the opportunities that we have with that. So we've got some tough decisions, but again, thank you for everybody that has worked on this, all the programs this year.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair, and to Chair Hornstein, too. I want to echo a lot of what you've heard today about your leadership and our appreciation of having open discussion that has been very, whether it's been partisan discussion or not, it was open and honest and an opportunity to do that. As somebody who has been new to the legislature and new to this committee, I appreciated your leadership and the time we've spent just learning more about not only each other but about transportation as well. So thank you for that. I just have two clarifying questions in regards to this page. We'll have more debate tomorrow or Monday, I'm sure, but it has to do on
Don't
page.
Don't scare me, Representative Peters.
It's 28, page 28 and 29 in regards to the resolution for county boards and creating their the sales tax. Line 28.25 indicates that your intent is that the transportation sales tax and the excise could be in addition to each other. It's not or, correct, that you were intending the board to have both options available at one time?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Petersburg, that's correct, but if it's not, I'll have counsel correct me.
Signal is what it is. So if you have a cell phone and it's close to the microphone, if you just move it away or put it behind your back, it helps. Or turn it off. When you turn them off, they don't interrogate anymore and don't disrupt like that.
You all should know that in one of the committees in the last week, we discussed a technological overview of all of our equipment here. That should be on the list. She'll immediately. It was in the tax committee, as a matter of fact.
I just wanted a clarification, Mr. Chairman. Are you talking, and Representative Peterson, are you talking about both the county board imposition without referendum and the wheelage tax, or just the county board imposition without referendum?
Well, Chair, I'm just inquiring. It looks like it says that they could do both, and I just want to make sure that is the intent of what your bill is at this point.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, by way of context, the sales and use taxes that are levied on a percentage basis are not typically levied on retail sales of automobiles, and so the $20 is a flat fee that's in lieu of the percentage basis. So automobiles would be taxed at the $20, and the up to a 0.5% rate would apply to other retail sales and uses. Now, my quick reading of the language here is that a county board would have authority to only impose one or the other or both of these two. I think this lines up with the metropolitan area transportation sales tax that's in place now. I think it's probably fair to say that the general intent has been that both would be implied because of the in lieu aspect, so that the flat fee would be what would be applied against motor vehicle sales.
Representative Petersburg.
And then with just a follow-up on just the following page on towards top 29.7, where it sounds like the allocation of some of those funds that could be used for transit and transit operations, it implies that if it's for transit operations, there would never be a sunset for this. And since we know that transit is always going to be a need for subsidy, that would be potential. And I'm guessing you'd say that then there would probably not be a sunset for that particular authorization. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I'll ask again to defer to Mr. Burris on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I think that's an accurate assessment that could be indefinitely imposed to cover ongoing operations.
Thank you.
Oh, Representative Beard.
thank you, Mr. Chair. As I sense we're wrapping up here, I just want to make a few comments about the bill as I've seen it presented today. And say, Chair Hornstein, thank you for bringing it forward. I will just offer two compliments, but I don't want to scare people off by thinking that I think this is a marvelous bill, if that would hurt your cause here, Mr. Chairman. But I will point out that on line 95 on our spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman, I believe, and I'm having staff research this, this is the largest highway appropriation in the history of the state. This actually goes to maintenance and road construction. The bill that I had the privilege of authoring 2 years ago was $1.5 billion, which at the time I think was one of the largest. You've upped me by $200 million, Mr. Chairman. I tip my hat to you for doing that. That's something I think you can be pretty darn proud of. There's going to be a lot of people moving a lot of dirt and doing a lot of useful work for the citizens of this state over the next 2 years, thanks to that number that you've put in there. The other issue I just wanted to thank you for moving forward was the concept that we kind of talked about with the corridor collaboratives or something like that, which you now call corridors of commerce. I think this is a marvelous idea that should be fleshed out further. I think you've set it up well by having MnDOT start to draw the process and have very capable people next door at DOT think about the ins and outs of how we could make this work. Because, you know, as we've talked before, there's a lot of concern about people cutting in line or cutting out of line and things like that. And I think having some of the area transportation managers and people that could actually benefit by this, like Highway 23 or 14 or 52, actually talk this through over coffee and donuts for the next year or so. They may actually come up with good policy that we could ratify next year and then have a framework that we can drop some significant money into and move things forward. So those of us, our friends at Highway 14 and other places, take hope, take heart, because we're actually doing good spade work to put the infrastructure in place so that we just don't drop money into a project that's going to have all kinds of burrs under the saddle when we can do this right the first time and maybe come back in 12 months and have a process and a system that people can actually hit the ground running with. So, Mr. Chairman, those are my comments. We'll see what we want to do for amendments going forward, but thank you for a bill that I think we can ponder over the weekend and ponder without heartburn occurring, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that very much.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you haven't, I mean, you're possibly, I mean, there's, we've got all these amendments floating out there potentially. So. But yeah, I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I want to, just if we're wrapping up, I have some comments, concluding comments, if there's no further questions.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and, you know, I really appreciated all the thoughtful comments, and as everyone has mentioned, it's not the bill I wanted to bring forward, but, you know, I've gotten some ideas today from the testimony, and, you know, it's possible, you know, I think there's some improvements that can be made yet. But just a few thank yous. You know, I have really appreciated Representative Beard's friendship over the time that we have served together in the legislature. We're part of that proud class of 2002, and I've just really enjoyed his friendship as we've moved in and out of the majority, but always continued our cooperation and commitment to working as best we can, even when we disagree on policy, but still in a civil and bipartisan manner. So, Representative Beard, that continued on, and I appreciate that. And I have to say, members, we have an incredible staff, both partisan and bipartisan, partisan and the House research staff. Mr. Nicely's been wonderful to work with. Ms. Hatt isn't here today. She's tending to a sick relative. You know, more than anything, Mr. Burris, you and Mr. Lee have been tremendous. We, as you know, we had a very different bill about a week ago, 5 days ago, and they've had to do some scrambling as a result of some developments that we quite frankly didn't expect. And so, you know, given that, this was probably an unusual amount of work that they had to do, and I just from the bottom of my heart want to thank you for that. And of course, then you know, Mr. Scheer and Ms. Nelson have been amazing as well. So we've had a good year. We have one more hearing on Monday, and my intention to pass this bill out then. And You know, at that point, our work will be done. We may have an informational hearing or two. There was an idea. And Representative Bernardi, you've been incredible, too. I didn't realize you came back from your education meeting. And of course, Representative Earhart, we've worked very close together as policy and finance chairs. You're really as much an expert on anyone as transportation finance and have taught me a lot and continue to teach me a lot about this, so I appreciate that. And thanks for filling in, Representative Bernardi. You remind me of, we talk about the future. There was one issue that kept coming up over and over again last Friday when I was in St. Cloud and in St. Michael. And people really want to talk about this mileage-based user fee in addition to how do we fund transportation into the future. This is a surprising amount of interest in this. So we may have one more hearing on that if we can fit it in before we adjourn. But if not, expect an interim hearing on that. We never did Representative Beard present this report, and I'm really interested in financing transportation in the future. We heard some references today about Virginia and other models, and I think that all has to be fully vetted before this committee sooner than later. So, you know, barring anything unusual, we may have an interim hearing on that, but at this point we have one more session to get a bill out, and really, again, thanks to everybody, and have a wonderful weekend.
Are we ready to adjourn?
What are our times then, if we could go over, Mr. Chairman, when we're convening on Monday and amendment deadlines, et cetera?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, our amendment deadline, I believe, is 5 o'clock today. And at that point, we're going to come back at Monday at 10 a.m. To take up amendments and pass our bill out of committee. We will be meeting in room 300 North. Unfortunately, no other rooms were available that morning.
And members, I don't want to, Mr. Chairman. And again, at that 5 o'clock, I mean, if it's a 5:30 or 6, I mean, that's probably fine. But we're not going to keep these guys here much longer than that.
So. Are we ready to adjourn, then, Mr. Chairman?
I am.
Sure. Thank you.